Mars to Earth.
Yikes, yeah. What are you? Are you on the space station?
No, I'm just here at the Mars compound.
There you go. All right, you ready to rock and roll?
Is this Tim?
Yes, I should have led with that.
Ladies and gentlemen,
kind of hard to believe that, 9 years have brought the water under the bridge. Back in the 60s, if some cops had shown up in body armor and machine guns and said, you do what we say, there would have been a great resistance. And people would have said, hey, wait a minute, you work for us. You can't treat us this way. But over the intervening years, slowly and surely, it just got to the point to where now today people just accept this militarized police force. And what's scary to me, Tim, is that in the coming future, the young people of today, this is what they've grown up with, and they're not even going to know the difference. The upside of the internet is that anybody and everybody has access to the internet. Now, the downside is that anybody and everybody has access to the internet.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 9, getting ready to kick off our 9th series of interviews here on the program. Very, very excited about it. I think this is the first time I've talked to our guest here at the beginning of the year, as well as the beginning of the season. So this is kind of exciting, and we're going to be covering sort of all the interesting things that have gone on since the last time we talked to him, because of course, as is tradition on the program, he kicks off every season of BOA Audio because he really is one of the first people to inspire me to look into all this with his outstanding book, Rule by Secrecy. Of course, I am talking about the amazing Jim Marrs, author of Crossfire, As Said, Rule by Secrecy, Alien Agenda, Psi Spies, Inside Job, Above Top Secret, Rise of the Fourth Reich, The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy, and the fiction book Sisterhood of the Rose, as well as his latest book, which we talked about when we kicked off Season 8, Our Occulted History. And you can find out all about that stuff at jimmarrs.com. Jim, welcome back to the show. Thank you for helping us kick off a whole new season of BOA Audio.
Well, thank you, Tim. It's always a delight to be with you. It's kind of hard to believe that, 9 years have brought the water under the bridge. And also, be on the alert, because within the next few months, you're going to see a new Jim Marrs book coming out that you're going to really like, called Population Control.
Oh, nice, nice.
The corporate elite are trying to kill us. Okay, so this makes some of the movements we see going, like Arab Spring and the Occupy movement, and this thirsting for more freedom and liberty. We're going to see this gaining even more strength once people figure out that this is not just some political argument. This is self-defense. These people that own these multinational corporations that are killing us with bad food, bad water, bad GMOs, bad vaccines. I mean, they make no bones about the fact that they want us dead. They want to reduce the world's population.
I know. That's been one of your, you've been really warning people about this for quite some time. I remember you've been really beating the drum on this, especially in... I don't recall now, I've read them all, but I get them confused. I don't know if it was Our Occulted History or I think it was The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy. You spent a lot of time talking about the GMOs and the all kinds of stuff related to that. So it sounds like an expansion of that. Interesting.
It's just getting worse, you know.
Yeah.
80% of our food supply today has GMOs in it. And although there is a legitimate controversy over, the goodness or the badness of genetically modified organisms, the bald-faced fact is that there are indications that it can be harmful, that it might even be altering our DNA. And the main point is that nobody truly knows what long-term effects are going to be when they start throwing in other species genetic material into our food.
Well, they just go willy-nilly to make money. They don't care what happens to people. Look at all the cell phones everywhere. They don't, you know.
I know. Now, here's the thing. You know, first off, I got a cell phone. Everybody got a cell phone. And they're wonderful little things, particularly if you get stuck out in the middle of nowhere and your car breaks down. It's a God's gift that you have a cell phone to call for some help. But I can't help but think of these people, especially younger people, who go throughout the day holding that radio transmitter, you know, receiver up to their head, you know?
Yeah.
There's been too many tests showing that it causes cancers. And one of the proofs of this, by the way, was a few years ago there was a law enforcement union that was suing some local municipalities because the cops had been using these handheld radar guns. And they would aim them forward down the road, and then if no cars were coming, they didn't turn them off. They just laid them in their lap.
Right.
And a bunch of these guys were coming down with testicular cancer.
Yikes. And look how many people keep their phone in their pocket. That's scary.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I got concerned about that, too, because I carried mine on a little holster thing on my hip, you know,
yeah.
But it's right there close to the junk.
Exactly. Yeah, it's close to business. It's close to business. It's been over a year since I talked to you last. We kicked off season 8 in October 2013. Here we are January 2015. So 14 months or so since the last time I talked to you. What have you been up to? How was your 2014? Is probably the best way to put it. What went on for you in the last year or so?
Oh, just the usual stuff. Keep in mind, see, I don't live in a city. I don't even live in a town. I'm out in the wilds of North Texas here, and for me, other than the season changes, not much happens to me personally, but of course, I sit there, and I consider myself a news magnet, because I have people, readers from all over the world, who send me clippings and items and, you know, things, even their thoughts and and everything else, and so it's kind of like I'm sitting in a satellite and overlooking the world and see what's going on. And I got to admit, it's a pretty pitiful picture, because although there's lots of good stuff going on the individual level, there are more and more people waking up to the corruption and the problems with centralized government, and there's more and more people waking up to the dangers of processed food and GMOs and herbicides that they're throwing everywhere, creating super weeds and antibiotic suppression. And so in one way, really good things are happening, and you can always find examples of individuals that are just doing wonderful, loving, helpful things. But in the broad picture, when you see the shaky financial situation of the entire world, and then you see the hatred and violence that's being perpetrated in the name of religion, it's like what's wrong with people? You know, sometimes I just wished I could get hold of everybody and shake them by the lapels and say, hey,
exactly.
Start using that God-given computer in your head called the brain and figure some of this stuff out. Well, let's start getting with the program.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting question. I kind of came to you while you were talking there. I was thinking about all the years we've been chatting, and you know, I agree with you. People are waking up year by year, but it's like here you and I are kicking off the ninth season of the show, the ninth time we've sort of talked about this. It's like, how many more people do you think need to wake up before we reach some kind of mass You know, you're seeing more people sort of gathering and stuff, but are we reaching any sort of state where things might
change? Yeah, we need to reach a tipping point.
Right, exactly. You know, how far away from this tipping point do you think we are?
You know what? I'm not sure we're that far away. I think we're getting pretty close, and I think that's why that the would-be rulers of the world, the 1%, secret team, the Illuminati, the New World Order guys, whatever you want to call them, okay? I think they're getting very fearful, and I think they're getting pushed up against the wall, and of course, they're going to be just like a cornered wild animal. The more pressure that's put on them, the more violence, counterattack there's going to be. And this is what's very worrisome because, you know, first, in my lifetime, which has not been inconsiderable now, I have lived through the international menace of the Jewish conspiracy, and when that culminated in World War II and the Holocaust, people went, wait a minute, this isn't right. So then immediately we were turned to the international communist conspiracy, you know, and that went on for about 70 years. And then all of a sudden communism just kind of collapsed, and all of a sudden we were in a vacuum, you know. Why do we need this super military industrial complex, you know, when there's no real enemies? So all of a sudden, oh, we've got Al-Qaeda, and we've got the Muslim extremists, all right? And then and now, since that's waning somewhat, now we got ISIS.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And, of course, if you go back to Carol Rosen, who was a head of Fairchild Industries and worked very closely with the old Nazi rocket scientist Wernher von Braun, and she said that he certainly understood this plan, because he said when communism finally was not the ultimate evil enemy, that it would be terrorists probably from the Middle East. And he said when that fails to work, then it's going to be a threat from space. Okay, and I think we're getting very close to that point where they're gonna, these would-be rulers, these self-styled globalists, are gonna suddenly come out and go. In fact, I just heard today, I've not heard all the details, but that they are releasing further information from Project Blue Book.
Yeah. Well, but I don't know about you, Jim, but for, you know, for my own entertainment's sake, I look forward to when the aliens are the great menace, because at least that'll be like living in the sci-fi world.
That's right. Exactly.
But you know, talk about a good story.
The problem is, how are we going to know if it's real or another false flag?
Exactly. Well, we won't even, the whole world will change at that point. That's just scary.
Well, everyone who knows anything about the military knows that they have access and are working on advanced technology that's 20, 30, 50 years ahead of anything we have in the public. And, in fact, this was one of the reasons that the false flag attack of 9/11 was so successful, is because, it involved some very advanced technologies that were just simply not known to the public. And so, therefore, the government could offer, whatever cockamamie cover story they wanted to, and, hardly anyone was in a position to rebut it.
Mm.
And so now, you know, I could see where, with holographic technology we have today, they could make Muhammad appear in the sky over Muslim countries and probably get half the world, you know, trying to fight the other half. Or in the case of the United States and Christian nations, I guess they could make Jesus appear, you know.
So right.
It's really kind of a worrisome thing about how do we know what's real and what's being fabricated?
Well, the good part is it seems like people are becoming more and more cynical to that whole idea, because if Jesus appeared in the sky tomorrow, I can tell you that I don't think even the majority of people would believe it was real.
That's
honestly.
Right. And I'll tell you something that's very, to me, that's hopeful that people are becoming. It's sad that we have to become so cynical, because I was raised in the post-World War II days when, you know, we were all living in euphoria, thinking, well, we've just made the world safe for democracy, and we've defeated the evil old Nazis and the evil old Japanese militants, and, you know, we're God's gift to the world. And it's kind of sad that now more and more people are waking up to the reality, but that's definitely happening. There was a poll a few months back by Gallup that showed that the Supreme Court only has a 35% approval rating. But that's better. But that's better than President Obama, who is now down to his lowest approval rating ever, which is like about 29%, I think. But then both of them look like pillars of integrity compared to Congress, who's down in the single digits. Only 7% of the people in this Gallup poll thought that Congress was doing a decent job or had any confidence in Congress.
Yeah.
And now that's really an incredible thing, because think about this, Tim, and all your listeners. There's so many things we could be doing, should be doing, but ultimately it's going to boil down to changing or creating new laws. Okay, well then that means that's going to have to be, according to the Constitution, done by the Congress. Oh, great. Congress can't even agree on when to adjourn.
Yeah.
You know, and here they're supposed to be coming up with bills that could actually straighten out a lot of the problems in this country.
Hmm.
You know, it's the chances are little to none.
Yeah, I don't even know how we're even going to get out of this mess. Every time I talk to you,
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
I don't mean to be a downer.
No, man, you're my bellwether of this whole situation. You follow this closer than I do. I kind of whistle through the graveyard myself. So it's good to talk to you. Now, when we set up the whole interview in the first place, about 2 weeks ago, this whole Charlie Hebke thing was going on in France. And yeah. By the time people hear this, it's going to be like the first week in February. So by then, they're already Charlie Hebke'd out. So let's, with that just as a sort of jumping off point, in the last year since I talked to you, we've seen this ISIS thing come up. You already mentioned it. But what do you make of all this, that it's just a reboot of Al-Qaeda?
Yeah, exactly. It's another name change. See, if you go back and study your true history, you find that in the 1930s, there was the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood that were devout Muslims and trying to establish a theocracy in some of the Middle Eastern countries. And they got taken over by the German Nazis, because a fellow by the name of Hussein, who helped create the Muslim Brotherhood, was a big fan of Adolf Hitler's, and he corresponded with him. And Hitler then sent a bunch of Germans down, and in fact, talk to any World War II vet who fought in North Africa, and they will tell you that we had about as much trouble with some of the Arabs at that time as we did with the German Afrika Korps. And then after the war, when the British took over the control of the Middle East, they were war-weary, didn't have the money or the time or the inclination, so they turned the Muslim Brotherhood over to the fledgling CIA. Well, the CIA then kept the Muslim Brotherhood on tap, and in the 1980s, when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, they used the Muslim Brotherhood as our surrogates over there to fight the Russian occupation. And we supplied them with guns and arms and ammunition and training and everything else.
Right.
In fact, we brought a Muslim cleric over to this country under the name of Tim Osman, and we trained him and we armed him and we gave him funds to go back and fight the Russians. But his real name was Osama bin Laden. And the higher-ups knew that people would recognize that the Muslim Brotherhood was a former Nazi organization that was under the control of the CIA, so they had Osama bin Laden change the name to Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda literally means the base. Well, early on, I thought that must mean their headquarters. But it turns out, according to a member of the British Parliament and to other whistleblowers within the CIA, that the base referred to the CIA computer base of Arab mercenaries that they could call upon to do anything they wanted to do.
Yeah, database.
And so this, of course, leads to the false flag operation of 9/11. And then after that, and now we see the same bunch of mercenaries, Arab mercenaries, that as an offshoot of Al-Qaeda, because now Al-Qaeda, we've been told that, you know, that we killed Osama bin Laden and all the top leadership of Al-Qaeda, and that we've pretty well neutralized Al-Qaeda. So they had to go somewhere else. So now they've created ISIS. And you have to ask yourself, where does this bunch of Arabs with very little money, funding, training, education? Where do they get hold of all these brand new Toyota pickup trucks and 50 caliber machine guns and SAM missiles and RPGs and stuff? Well, it's because we're selling to them and we're supplying them just like we have for decades. And so this leads me to the conclusion that today in America, we have the best enemies that money can buy.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. It seems it's very unsettling. I was thinking about it today before we talked. This is like the most creeped out and sort of uneasy I've felt about the world since like maybe a year or two after 9/11.
Well, you know, and without going too deeply into the Paris Charlie Hebdo situation, you know, it has all the earmarks of the false flag. The people involved, there were some reports showing that, of course, they had their faces covered, but there were some reports that stated at least one of these guys had blue eyes. So, you know, it's not all just Arabs. And the fact that they had modern, sophisticated guns, weapons, equipment, they were making military hand signals. And then the video of them shooting the policeman in the head really bothers me, because I do know about, having been in the military and having been in intelligence and having been a police reporter back in the day when we actually traveled with the cops and went into suicides and murder scenes and everything else, I can guarantee you if a person without any head cover is shot at point-blank range with a high-powered rifle, as supposedly was this case, his head would have exploded like a watermelon, and it didn't happen. He just laid his head down. So there is some contention that this video was faked, and I think, you know, at first it went everywhere, and then it was pulled off of YouTube and off of some of the more prominent sites, and I think that was for two reasons. The ostensible reason was they didn't want to show this graphic video, but the next reason was is that it clearly shows that his head does not react as one would if actually struck by a high-velocity rifle bullet. And the second thing was is if indeed was faked, then by keeping that video in front of people, people with sophisticated equipment and knowledge might be able to figure out what a fake it is. And so... And then you also have to realize that they claim they found the intact passport of one of the attackers lying in the street. Oops, does that sound familiar?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember on 9/11, they found a passport that they said belonged to one of the hijackers lying in the streets of New York? You know, that's...
Yeah, it was in his getaway car, they said, the guy in France. In one of the getaway cars, they found his ID.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's a little standard operating procedure. You know, it's just like in the Kennedy assassination. They said they found Oswald's wallet at the scene of the Tippit shooting. But then they also said that he had a wallet on him when he was taken to the police station. And then the Warren Commission determined that he had left his wallet behind at the Payne residence that morning before he left to work. So, wait a minute. Three wallets? You know, how many people have three wallets?
He's got a magic wallet, like the magic bullet.
Magic wallet. And we are just so susceptible to, and the thing is, see, it used to be at one time, we looked to journalism and to the news media to try to keep us balanced as to what's real, what's not, what's valid, what's not, and, you know, to counter some of the government pronouncements and propaganda. But today we can't even count on that, because now there's literally a handful, like five major multinational corporations, all with interlocking ownership and directorships, who determine everything we see and hear. So it's kind of tough for the average guy to try to figure out what's real and what's not.
That raises an interesting point that I wanted to talk to you about, kind of segues perfectly from there, and that's this. We've talked in the past, and you kind of mentioned earlier about the health concerns about young people being on the internet. And we've talked in the past, I think, about just people in general being sort of hooked on the internet. It seems like now they're also gearing us, they're sort of amping, I'm talking about they being just sort of the meme, the mainstream media, whatever you want to call it, you know, the people that stir the drink. They seem like they're amping up sort of these internet fears. You know, we need more internet security after that Sony hack and a lot of the other stories. It seems like that's a recurring thing. And then we've got the other part about the whole, like, are they going to regulate the internet? So it feels like you're talking about the media controlling voices. The alternative voices are already kind of starting to feel the heat a little bit, maybe. It's getting a bit disconcerting looking at it from the big picture.
That's true, and I think the two connect, okay?
Yes, exactly.
The ruling globalists are fearful of a free and open internet where people from all around the world in all walks of life can freely communicate and interact with each other. So therefore, they have to clamp down, just like certain totalitarian societies like China and Indonesia and a few others, Egypt tries to do. You know, they outlaw certain internet activities. And they're trying to do that here, but of course, they can't just come out and say, we want to control the internet, because then everybody will bow their backs and say, no, you're not going to do that. So they have to turn around and start creating events, creating circumstances, and then hitting everybody saying, well, the internet's a cesspool, you know, there's too much pornography, and there's too much racial hatred, and blah, blah, blah. And for the good of everybody, we're going to have to kind of shut it down. And what kills me is that when they propose legislation to severely curtail the internet, they don't call it the curtail the internet bill. It's, you know, it's instead they say this is internet integrity, and we're trying to protect the internet.
Yeah. It's worrisome, because, you know, the other part of it is, too, that I was talking about this with somebody the other day. It's like they've got people hooked on the internet, too. If you told people that they couldn't get, you know, if they couldn't get their Netflix unless they had to supply a thumbprint to get on the internet, they would line up tomorrow to do it. They wouldn't care. So it's getting scary the way.
Well, and they call it net neutrality.
Yes.
You know, but net neutrality is just a buzzword for control of the internet.
Yeah, I don't even know if, you know, I hear it and I'm like, I'm still not, I don't know if I'm for or against it, because it's so confusing, net neutrality.
Well,
I'm pretty sure I'm against it.
They do that intentionally, just like we have found out now to our detriment about Obamacare, which on the one hand just kind of generally sounded like, well, you know, good solid health care for everyone, that sounds like a good thing, you know, and then you get to the particulars of it, and then you find out that some of the people who actually authored that legislation admit that it was done in a convoluted manner so that the average person couldn't understand what was really happening to them. See, that's unconscionable. If Congress passes a law, it ought to be one that's made clear to everyone and everybody gets their input. That's the way it's supposed to work in a representative democracy. But as we all know, that's not the way it works.
Well, people are on their own nowadays. That's the scary part. Now, maybe you can.
Yeah.
You
would... Unfortunately, that's true. In fact, I've probably mentioned this before, but you know, the upside of the internet is that anybody and everybody has access to the internet. Now, the downside is that anybody and everybody has access to the internet.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have to be very, very selective and very judicious in using the internet. I have to do is, for instance, go Google internet myths. Okay, and you're going to find a whole list of things that a lot of people believe are absolutely true, and then you find out, no, they're really not true at all. And of course, this is because of things that range from out and out hoaxes and fabricated things, photoshopped photographs, digitally altered films and videos, all the way to just honest people who make mistakes and put erroneous information out.
Yeah.
You cannot take just something that comes in over the internet as a statement of fact and just run with it until you check it out and find out if it is indeed fact.
Oh, yeah, but that's the problem, is that we've also taught like a whole generation of people that are just completely, they don't know how to do that differentiation.
That's true. Area. Now we're back to the school system, and we could spend, first you have to understand that all the education system in this country is now under control of the federal government with programs like No Child Left Behind and the new curriculums that they're putting out.
Yeah.
And they insist that everybody follows them. And this is all done to the tune of teaching kids to pass tests. We have kind of given up on trying to teach kids how to critically think and how to reason through things. When I was a kid, even in grade school, we actually were encouraged to study on our own and to look at the other sides of things. I remember even in college at journalism classes, you know, we were told, look behind the official pronouncements and look behind the official corporate statements and find out what's really going on and tell the truth to the people. You know, fool that I was, I thought that's what I was supposed to be doing. And I was rudely surprised when I got out in the real world of journalism and found out that not only will corporate and government leaders lie to you and give you bad and jaundiced information, but your own editors will fight with you. How do you know that? Have you got 3 sources? You know, can you prove this? I'm still running into this, okay?
Oh, yeah.
But that was kind of to be expected. The real slap in the face was when I met so many people in the public who said, oh, man, I really don't want to know about that. Don't tell me about that. You know, and that's pretty discouraging for someone who's trying to find and report the truth.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take you down a different path, just in a weird way, because you talked about the schools and stuff. I was talking about this the other night when I went out for drinks with some friends from high school, and it's like, you know, I graduated from high school almost 20 years ago, and we were saying, just talking about the old teachers and stuff, and I was saying, you know, you can't even, if you wanted to, like on Monday, well, not Monday, because that was the holiday, but if you wanted to go down to the school like today and just look around, see if any of your old teachers were there, that kind of thing, you can't even do that. You know, you gotta fill out paperwork and things like that. You can't even stop by your old high school. It's kind of...
They are conditioning the upcoming generations to live in a prison-like atmosphere.
That's exactly what I was going for,
yeah. Got to go through metal detectors, got to be padded down, got to be inspected, you know. It's no privacy, no, you know, it's just terrible.
Mm.
It's terrible. And what's most terrible is not the fact that authorities try to push that through either out of genuine concern for security or out of a phony plan to just play to the crowd and go with the local trends, but the fact that this is being pushed at the highest levels by people who want and actually make no secret of the fact that they want to control society.
Yeah.
And, of course, we were warned about this as far back as 1948 when a British socialist named Eric Arthur Blair wrote a book and said that the game plan was to divide the world into 3 socialist blocks and then play one constantly off against another for maximum profit and control. And, of course, in his book was 1984 because he transposed the numbers of the year, and he used the pen name of George Orwell. So Orwell's 1984, which has become a classic example of totalitarianism in action, is becoming more and more of our reality.
Mm. And then you compound that, you're hitting right on some of the stuff I was thinking about going into this, because it's like, it seems like, you know, we have to, you know, they're conditioning people to worry about ISIS and that kind of thing. Oh, it could come here, it could happen here, you know, all the stuff that happened in France. But then also, we're getting hit with another layer of concern, because in the past year, seemed like things went really geopolitical, and it's like Russia's coming into the Ukraine, and the oil prices are all going crazy and stuff, so we're this upheaval on both sides of the thing.
Well, yeah, again, wait a minute. We have to stop and consider, and you have to put things in context and history.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you said Russia is coming into the Ukraine. Russia's always had control over the Ukraine, all right? In World War II, the Ukraine was part of Russia, and the Germans invaded, and in fact were warmly greeted by many of the inhabitants of the Ukraine because they were getting pretty tired of the Soviet rule. Okay, so what's happening is that Western influences have gone into the Ukraine and said, you guys, and stirred up nationalist feelings, and they said, you know, we're going to break away, and Russia says, no, you're not, and that's leading to the conflict. We have to ask ourselves who started all this. If for my money, this would be like Texas deciding to go back and be a republic again, which I guarantee there's plenty of people down here who would gladly support that. And then, of course, what's the United States going to do? What would Washington do? They'd say, well, you can't do that. I mean, we've already seen that back in the mid-1800s when 11 states said, we're tired of this centralized government that doesn't take our wishes into account, so we're just going to separate, we're going to go our own way. And Washington said, no, you're not, and they fought an entire four-year war.
Hmm. It's worrisome to me, I guess, is the larger point. So they're sort of positioning America against, they're sort of reigniting this global warfare potential here.
Exactly. Well, they're playing a dangerous game because on the one hand, they do want to stir up the passions and they want to keep the war machine going. You understand that is the political party of the United States. There's no real independent Democratic Party or Republican Party. They're just the Democratic and Republican, or more correctly, the liberal and conservative wings of the war party.
Mm.
All right? Because although the controlled corporate mass media will allow us to debate and have arguments over same-sex marriage or abortion or stem cell research, you'll notice that we are never allowed to truly debate foreign policy or military operations. Both parties, both wings of the war party, are in agreement on all that.
Hmm.
So the war machine keeps going. And so they're these would-be globalist rulers, they want to keep the war machine greased and rolling at full speed. So they've got to continually have warfare because, after all, warfare involves defense, and defense is the defining role of any government. In fact, if you go back to the original Constitution of the United States, the Congress and the central government were only given two powers. One, to coin and regulate money. And by the way, it was supposed to be based on solid wealth such as gold and silver. And the second thing was to provide for the common defense. And it's been that defense clause that has been used from right on up till today to excuse the whole reach for control by a centralized government.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of the oil price fluctuation? Everyone's all thrilled.
Well, again,
here.
this is a pushback against the people who are not falling into line for the New World Order. And, of course, I'm talking about the BRICS nation, BRICS. That's Brazil, India, Russia, China, and South Africa. And interestingly enough, this is because they are now pushing back against the Anglo-American financial system, which has been centered in the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Well, the BRICS nations have already announced that they're creating their own World Bank. So now we're not going to be able to use the financial loans and guarantees to whip about the leadership of other nations. We're going to be in a contest with the BRICS nation, and they're going to have currencies backed by gold and silver, which is going to probably prove to be the ruination of the U.S. dollar, which today is now only worth about less than 40 cents and is only propped up not by any real assets, but simply by the threat of nuclear weapons.
Well, talk more about this BRICS thing, because that's scary. This is the first I've heard about this. Brazil, Russia, China, India, and South Africa, there's a lot more of them than us. That's scary.
Yeah, exactly. But and they are, and they, of course, are, and then, there, of course, there's the axis of evil, you know, Iran,
yeah.
And, you know, these other nations that are simply not buckling under to the American-English financial rulers, and have actually historically. If you look at Russia, the reason that everyone turned against communism was because they refused to create a central bank that was tied to the international bankers.
Hmm.
And that, of course, we kept having these programs against Russia to the point where finally communism collapsed under its own weight, and because of the inadequacies of grand-scale socialism. And And then the first thing that happened after the collapse of communism was, is that the international bankers went in and said, okay, if you create a central bank, we'll loan you money to keep your country going. And that's exactly what happened. And now, Putin and others over there are trying to, extricate themselves from that kind of, control. And all of a sudden they're becoming our enemy again.
Hmm. Well, it does seem like, if you think about this, the sort of Illuminati, conspiracy, if you will. It does seem like it does seem predominantly sort of based out of kind of like a European American slant. You never really hear about
it. It always has been.
Yeah.
You know, if you, the Rothschild banking dynasty, of course, you know, was headquartered in Europe. And, if you go study, you'll find that, the American version of the super rich involved the Rockefeller family. And then you study and you find out that the originator, John D. Rockefeller, got his start and became dominant in the petroleum industry in the world. By the late 1800s, he had just about had control of all of the petroleum in the world. And if you'll study, you'll find that he got his start with money lent to him by the Bank of Cleveland, which was a registered Rothschild bank. So in other words, the Rockefellers are simply the North American front people for the Rothschilds.
Right, which makes me concerned. Like I said to you, if India and Brazil and China decided to get together just based on the sheer amount of people they have, it's like you kind of have to go along with whatever they want.
Well, China's already got the upper hand anyway, because just go to any Walmart, pick up just about any product, and you can find it's made in China.
Mm.
So, you know, right now, under the New World Order, China is producing the products, and we Americans are buying them.
Well, you got to give the power brokers credit, though. They've eased Americans into this completely blindly. I mean, you know,
exactly.
You still have these major motion pictures opening and, you know, big movies open, and they make hundreds of millions of dollars. It's like people just spending money and be entertained and go to sports.
Exactly. And that's, you know, if you know your history, you'll know that that's nothing new, okay? That goes all the way back to the Roman Empire.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, where they kept the public pacified with free bread and circuses.
Mm-hmm.
In the Colosseum. And it's really no different today. You know, the methods of control remain the same. All that's changed is the technologies. In the Roman Empire, you had to physically go down to the Colosseum to watch men fight. And now all you got to do is turn on your TV.
Or pull out your phone.
Or now you can walk around down the street and look at it.
It's mesmerizing. Speaking of mesmerizing, what are your thoughts on the MH370, the missing plane? That's been one of the most fantastically bizarre stories I've seen in a long, long time, and I figured
I know that, and I don't know. There's obviously something going on, and I don't think we're getting to the bottom of it. The other day I saw my friend Linda Moulton Howe posted on her Earth Files website a video a guy took that looks like a meteor coming down. I mean, there's a flaming thing coming down through the sky, and it's trailing a trail behind it, and then all of a sudden this little light pops out of it and goes flying off upwards and out of the picture frame. And it's almost like, you know, there was an escape pod on something that was crashing into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's strange, and they checked to make sure it wasn't a phony film, and they really can't explain what that was. And of course, we had the thing that struck in Russia. We've got all kinds of strange things going on. People all around the world hearing these strange horn-like sounds, and they can't find out what's causing it. And holes, sinkholes appearing all around the world. All kinds of strange things going on. And when it can't be hidden from the public, then you get a little bitty blurb in the local media, and it goes away. And as far as I know, there's not anybody publicly looking into these things and trying to figure out what's going on. And I strongly suspect that the three missing Asian airliners have something to do with all of that.
Right. Yeah. Well, you wonder if there's a larger story at work here with that plane. That's
exactly
what makes me concerned, because it seems
They
really made a big deal.
But even if there is, we're not going to be told about it.
Exactly. That's the next thing I was going to ask. If you think we'll ever even find out, you know, it's kind of like what you were saying earlier about about aliens and stuff like that. Will we ever even know if they come out and say, yeah, we found the plane, they'd be all in the ocean? How are we even going to know if they're telling the truth at all at this point? So,
yeah.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?